Hello, I'm Ian Stone and welcome to the show that likes to get in the audience's face and let them know that we're there. For the next hour, you can relax safe in the knowledge that however bad you think your team are, they're not getting any worse while we're on. So pull up a chair, take the weight off and come with us on a journey into the lighter side of the beautiful game, because the football's on. Yes, this week on the show, we'll be delving deep into the cognitive dissonance of Everton and Manchester United, ruminating on relegation, pontificating on promotion, looking forward to West Ham and Rangers in the Europa League semi-finals, and after Bruno Fernandes and Jorginho both missed penalties, we'll be asking whether it's time to put a stop to the stutter. But we can't do that without guests, and I've got two of the finest comedians who haven't got anything better to do. It's the designer of the Hadron Collider, Ivo Graham, and the composer of the theme tune for Countryfile, Jeff Norcott. Morning.
Hello, Stoney, you well?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you very much. Jeff, what have you noticed this week?
Well, I've brought it up on the show before, but injury time getting longer. I mean, it's worth saying with injury time that once upon a time, when they first started holding up the boards, if there was 3 minutes, there'd be a murmur. If there was four, there'd be a gasp. It's like another game. Now it's routinely 6-7 minutes. It's making final score impossible because the final scores aren't coming in. They used to start trickling in from quarter to four. Now they're bleeding into the beginning of Britain's Got Talent. It's ridiculous. We've got trains to catch.
I like the idea of Simon Cowell and David Walliams just giving us the like League Two scores because they couldn't have time to finish them. Ivo, what have you got for us?
Well, I hate to be a pedant, Jeff, but if you're watching final score from quarter to four, then you're definitely jumping the gun a bit much. There's a whole second half's worth of injury time still to come.
Fair point.
And Walliams hasn't been a judge for about 3 years. But anyway,
Ivan's got talent.
Is this how it's
I hate
be,
to be. In fact, I love to be a pedant. He's on this series.
Yeah, I've had an absolute shocker there. I was thinking about Piers Morgan. I'm sorry. I'm always thinking about Piers.
Anyway, what have you noticed?
I've noticed my own failings again. But in other news, I've noticed Gareth Bale looking lonely and lost. Not admittedly a particularly hard spot over the last few years. And I know that there are certain quarters, mainly in Madrid, who think that he asks for it. Wales, golf, Madrid in that order, etc. But there was some footage of pretty much everyone else in the Real team and entourage going absolutely nuts in the dressing room after a plucky away win at, I want to say, Sevilla. And then the camera cuts to Gareth Bale just stood looking so out of it and confused. At least in the Ashley Cole Roma photo, one of the great photos, he's standing very far away from the rest of the team, but he's still smiling. You know, there's still a positivity about him. Yeah. Bale is a man who somehow looks like he's missing being on loan at Jose Mourinho's Spurs, which is a hell of a thing to be nostalgic for.
Yeah, there is a certain Zelig-like quality to him in the Real Madrid.
Fantastic word. And also, speaking of Jose Spurs, please do enjoy the new Getir-sponsored training top. Other grocery delivery services are available.
Okay, thank you for that. So, the Merseyside derby went exactly the way we expected, with Liverpool winning and Divock Origi scoring. But with Burnley's win against Wolves, Everton did what they've threatened to do all season and ended the day in the bottom three. Ivo, Everton really could go down. I mean, that was a sort of Mourinho-type defensive display, but they still lost.
But I think it's important to say that they lost against Liverpool. That is obviously, you know, an emotionally loaded derby that they'd have loved to have drawn or won. But that's not the game they have to win. You know, the games they've got to win, they've got, I think, a couple more difficult ones and a slightly easier run in. And that's where it's going to be won and lost. I'm torn. Big fan of David Moyes' Everton. Big fan of some of the more sort of flamboyant and comical Everton teams since David Moyes. Big fan of them as just a part of my childhood and the fabric of the top division. But there is also something very exciting about the undoing of one's childhood, the loss of innocence. And every time that a team gets relegated from the top flight for the first time in one's existence, I remember it with Newcastle about a decade ago, with Villa about half a decade ago, there's something like, oh, things will never be the same. I mean, obviously both teams have bounced back and you can almost forget the championship years, but it's seismic narratively and you want it to happen almost.
I agree. I remember when Corinthian Casuals went down. That was a big day for me.
Do you remember that big six-pointer against Royal Fusiliers, Stoney? Remember that? Oh, what a game that was.
That was outrageous. They were armed. That wasn't fair.
Stoney was there with his rattle.
Everton versus the Old Etonians used to be the game of the season.
Jeff, Richarlison spent half the game on the ground holding his face. Do you think he's just got very sensitive skin?
The Charlatans? What, the Britpop band from the mid-90s? I don't keep up with top flight football. You say something like the Charlatans. I mean, How High was an absolute banger, but I don't know what you're talking about. What I know about is rivalries, okay? And this is probably the most tepid of all the local derbies. I know when you speak to Liverpool and Everton fans, they often say, oh, Derby Day, it's a big one up here. They're sort of like each other, aren't they? I know people will be throwing stuff at the camera now. But, I mean, it's so close. There's not really any of the kind of rancor. There's no sectarian stuff going in, not in a meaningful way. Not that, obviously, that's a good thing. But I just wonder if Liverpool fans are entirely earnest about wanting Everton to go down. I feel like, I don't really know what they gain from that other than losing two, you know, quite good games a season. But but from my point of view, you know, the last time Everton were close to going down, they played Wimbledon on the final game of the season. And obviously there's been a court case, so I can't say that Hans Seegers threw it into his net. But he seemed to have his mind on the beach. And who paid for that holiday, we'll never know.
No, you're not insinuating anything.
Absolutely
there,
not.
Really.
Ian.
Ivo, Liverpool may well win the quadruple and Everton could go down. Is that almost too much for the storyline? I mean, if you wrote that in a drama, they'd say, you don't need the relegation, that's just milking it.
Yes, it would be very interesting to know what Liverpool fans would be happy to sacrifice, the Everton relegation or one of the four trophies, and if so, which one? Of course, you'll never be able to consult a Liverpool fan about this because Jeff has just driven them all away from the programme forever with his charming.
They're probably boycotting it already for some reason. You know what they're like.
Goodness me, Jeff. Even by Norcott standards, that's a hell of a thing. And I'd like to distance myself from it and say that I actually love the city of Liverpool. And Frank Lampard is a modern conservative that I'm not on board with. We proceed onwards. I don't know what I meant by that. I do apologise. It's not for me to say, Ian, what Liverpool fans would most be happy to jettison from the dream season, whether it is the Everton relegation or one of the four trophies. You'd have to say probably they'd be happy to jettison the Carabao Cup, but that's the one they've already won. So that's sort of in the bag. And that's the problem with the Carabao Cup is it starts the quadruple chat, but actually it's the one that then you resent being left with if you only win sort of 3-2 or even, dare I say, just one of the big four. I think Liverpool would be happy to win the league and see Everton go down. I think if I was a Liverpool fan, that would be my dream combo.
I think the problem with this conversation is that we started off talking about Everton going down and we've ended up talking about Liverpool possibly winning the quadruple.
Well,
I mean, Jeff, I'll ask you this. Is this like with Liverpool and Everton? It's like if you live in a house where your partner does the same thing you do and they get all the work calls.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is a problem. Maybe Everton would actually benefit from a season in the Championship, you know. I mean, one thing I've learned about dropping down levels, and let's be honest, we probably dropped down too many levels to the Combined Counties League. That was a drop too far. But there are new grounds. You get to be the big fish again, you know. Everton, solid mid-table side, usually, you know, sometimes better, sometimes worse. But they'll get to sort of strut around the Championship for a while. It's got quite a big trophy. Yeah. The Championship. It's got a ridiculous, probably only exceeded by the Stanley Cup, the hockey trophy in America, which I didn't realise I knew the name of till I even said that. It's crazy stuff happening in my brain today.
By the way, I should say that Jeff will be performing in Liverpool at some point. If you give us the date, you can all sort of form a mold
and
go down there, I guess. Meanwhile, 35 miles down the M62, Old Trafford is possibly the most emotionally unstable place in football at the moment. And this is coming from an Arsenal fan. Fan protests against the Glazers, a stadium in dire need of repair work, and enough anxious energy on the pitch to completely wean us off our dependence on Russian gas. Ivo, they've appointed Erik ten Hag as the new manager. Do you think Moses would be a better fit?
I think that's a classic example, Ian, of me having a vague idea of what I could say about Erik ten Hag, but having no idea how to bring Moses into the chat at short notice.
Miracle worker. Is what I'm miracle saying. Miracle
yeah,
worker.
That was something yeah, else Bible Stoney Moses. Was present for as well. He was there for that.
I was a bit young to remember that, but yeah. There's a lot of walking about. That's what I remember.
Ian, I don't know about Erik ten Hag. I'm intrigued to see just how long this period of complete chaos and disarray can continue. What I find very interesting, to take a quick trawl through the various MUFC tweets and fora, is that I think Rangnick is basically being sort of not just forgiven for presiding over another horrific sort of mini patch, but also being given huge credit for the fact that he's fronting up about the top-down toxicity. And they're loving this, and they're saying, can't wait to have Rangnick part of the sort of future rebuild as the whatever director to Erik ten Hag, which, you know, of course, he's inherited a huge mess and egos and sort of expectations and a lack of fulfillment and just a bad culture. And I've seen someone said, you can't blame the babysitter for the way the kids were raised. And it's like, babysitters do still have a brief to come in and, you know, get as many things as they can get right for the sort of duration of the 2 or 3 hours that they're in charge.
Yeah.
And from my armchair, and it's an armchair for which I've been pilloried by Manchester United fans on Instagram after previous episodes of this show, it doesn't look like Rangnick's putting the right people in the team or really inspiring anyone out of their funk. It doesn't take away from the many, many great things he's done with the various Red Bull enterprises over the years. But, you know, would Solskjaer to the end of the season have been much worse than this? No.
Well, no, watching them the other day. I do wonder, like some comics we know, is there a sense that their elevated view of how good they are is holding them back?
Let's name names. If we're going to play this game,
let's get into probably it. Probably a Scouse comic you could probably find.
I've got nothing against the people of Liverpool and all their resentments. No,
But you know what I mean, though, Jeff, that they do, they sort of think that, oh, we're Manchester United. It shouldn't be like this. And that sort of way of thinking is going to hold them back.
Not, I would say, the kids that are starting to support Man United now. I think we view everything through the tint of being middle-aged people that we're used to a certain thing for quite a while. I think one thing that happens when you've had great success for a while and then you don't have it for quite a long time is you really do reflect on how much more you should have savoured and enjoyed the good times. I always try and bring in cricket on this show, but when England were beating Australia home and away, I remember there was a series in 2013 where we beat them 3-0 and I didn't even watch one session out of a whole test match. I was just gorging on the runs.
What were you thinking?
And the wickets. It's same with Wimbledon, you know, when we were running away with the Isthmian Premier. I mean, that season, I was just like, yeah, whatever, we've beaten Staines again. But now, given the season we've had, I wish I'd thought more about that victory at Staines, you know, and at Hampton and Chesson and Hook. But I think that they've just, what they want to do is stop. Their worst nightmare is for this to become, because Man United had that run of not winning the league for ages. Then Liverpool had it. And then Man United, that fear, or the amount of time that they've spent lauding it for what happened there. But now all of that is enshrined on social media and there could be a lot of people saying, this aged well. That's the main thing people want to avoid.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Erik ten Hag, Ivo, in Holland, the way he communicates is thought of as otherworldly. Do you think that will fit in with being the manager of the biggest football club on earth and in a city as plain spoken as Manchester?
I think there's nothing wrong with a little bit of otherworldliness, Ian.
Ivo, this Tolkien, is why we get you on the show.
Tolkien, Pullman, you know, even the highly religious allegories of C.S. Lewis.
This is Manchester United.
Man U. Theatre of Dreams.
I think that most of the Manchester United players ought to be able to buy into some articulately expressed alternate realities. Whether Harry Maguire will be able to keep up is another matter. But that's, you know, if it's the end of the line for him, I think some people might be mighty relieved. I saw a clip this week of Erik ten Hag as a 11-year-old or something having a chat to Johan Cruyff on some Dutch television show where he was already giving his verdict on how managers ought to talk to their players. So, again, you know, perhaps some people don't buy into ideas of philosophies and processes as much as, you know, old-fashioned grit and bluster. But if you do buy into that sort of thing, Ten Hag's been doing it for ages.
What's happening at Manchester United is just a it's happening on a fundamental level. The relationship, the players with each other, the players with the fans, the fans with the board. It's fantastic. I mean, it's just one of it's one of the best things that's happened in football for a while. I mean, we were hoping, if you are a sort of cynical person like me, when the Saudis took over Newcastle, you thought, well, that could be funny, or Manchester City would come off the ropes. But this is different, but it's rewarding nonetheless.
Yeah. I've heard Jonathan Lewin, the Guardian, and I've quoted him a few times on here. He said, Paul Pogba was the right player signed for the wrong reasons, the product of a grotesque star fetish that set United back a decade. I mean, we know TV programmes that have the same philosophy. not this one, obviously. We'll take anyone. But you understand what I'm saying.
I don't think I've ever seen this many shots across the bows from Ian Stone about the state of the comedy industry.
Yes. All right, we'll leave that there.
No, I'm always happy to go full Sooness about Pogba. I think, you know, it's very tricky because I certainly don't think he's the villain that some make him out to be. But he, you know, he doesn't deliver consistently enough. And arguably, you know, most of the best performances seen from him have been in a France shirt in recent years with N'Golo Kanté doing the work of two people sort of either side of him. And, you know, with no disrespect to the visibly moved Scott McTominay, but he's not covering as much of the earth's surface as Kanté is. Pogba, no, I mean, just the ultimately, you know, again, I don't watch enough Man United games to comment on how much he's doing on and off the ball and how much effort he really is putting in and how much he's just a scapegoat. But just in terms of financial excess, something which I'm not as big a fan of as my background might suggest, the fact that he was allowed to leave for free, bought back for, what, 90 million, and now he's going to go for free again. Was it Oscar Wilde who said to let Paul Pogba go once for free? Maybe cast as a misfortune, but twice surely looks like carelessness.
What other football shows quote Oscar Wilde? That's it for part one. When we come back, we're taking a trip from joy to pain and back again as we talk relegation and promotion. Back in a bit. Part two of The Football's On with me, Ian Stone, the lead soprano at London's Royal Choral Society, Ivo Graham, and keen Rotarian, Jeff Norcott. This is, of course, the business end of the season. That's right, up to now, it's all been very light-hearted and fun, but the clocks have gone forward. Easter is behind us, and this is when the business gets done. And there's nothing more brutal in the football business than getting relegated from the entire football league. That's what happened to Oldham Athletic on Saturday afternoon. Ivo, you've been through relegation. Describe it to the viewers in a succinct and funny way.
It's a root canal followed by a very upsetting personal email. just speaking of two things I've had a lot of recently. I obviously should take no pleasure at all in the relegation of any team, least of all a proud and historic club like Oldham Athletic. There is a tiny amount of relief that they have taken an accolade, that could very easily have been Swindon's, which is first Premier League team to be relegated out of the Football League. I think it was probably us or them for that, maybe Bradford. And also, they did go down under the stewardship of John Sheridan, who has been a bit of a sort of firefighting hero for them in recent years, but was very much the complete villain of the piece alongside our chairman in Swindon's relegation from League One last season. The dinosaur, the Shezodactyl. but the fact is, it's not really his fault for Oldham this season either. It's the men, I believe, by the name of Lemzagam, about whom the Oldham fans were unfurling that get out of our club banner. Men with bad passion, bad recruitment, bad philosophy, and bad sort of
attitudes,
bad reluctance to walk away and let someone else take over. And you know, Oldham, you know, there should be, it should be a third tier club, dare I say, alongside Swindon, and instead it's tier five.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as you said, founder member of the Premier League in 30 years, it's all gone wrong. Jeff, it's hardly a precipitous decline, though, is it? I mean, 30 years is a fair time.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say there was another founder member of the Premier League that ended up playing in the combined counties because of that travesty FC from Buckinghamshire and what they did. But I don't want to get into that. I do want to get into that.
Don't you?
No, I do.
Yes, you do.
But it's confusing now because we've got our own ground. So there's a sliding doors moment I can't really get my head around. But this is about Oldham right now. This is about Oldham. And yeah, as Ivo said earlier in the show, is that, you know, part of your experience of maturing as a man, a football fan, or a woman, you know, watching football, that happens too now, is that you will see fallen giants. You will see fallen giants. I mean, I'm just offending everybody. But you'll see Portsmouth in League One. You see, but Sunderland in League One, you'll see it. But this is much rarer than that. I mean, it only seems like yesterday for me that, you know, Andy Ritchie was playing in an FA Cup semi-final, you know, against United at Main Road. But it wasn't yesterday, as you say. It was 30 years ago, and that is more. It's more than long enough for this to happen. So I remember, like, when I first started following football, you'd hear things like Blackburn Rovers won the league four times in the 1880s. Stoney, and what a team, yeah, Stoney. Talk us through the wing backs.
Well, we didn't play those formations back then.
Yeah, it was the 1-4-5, wasn't it? It was the 1-4-5 formation.
11 men in very heavy boots.
I mean,
just trying to run through a pitch that looked like the Somme.
AFC, and many of them did go on to contest at the Somme.
One more question, Ivor, I'll ask you, actually both of you, do you think that Arsenal fans like me, having never suffered relegation, are missing something from their football experience? Like, you know, you're like mothers judging people who've never had kids.
Yeah, 100%, because it is, what it shows you is the gratitude, is that the club being still there, and this is a serious point, is the most important thing. You fancy Dan's up there. Oh, we might, the European Super League, oh, I hate Arsenal now. Oh, well, they're not going to be in it. I've forgotten about all that. And you get so fixated on whether or not you're in the Champions League. But it's a football club. It's a club where people go to play and watch and enjoy. I sound like Jimmy Hill now. Ask Ivo the same question. I've embarrassed myself.
I was happy to let you go. I was enjoying it.
Jumpers. I mean, it's literally jumpers for goalposts, wasn't it? I mean, that was the next thing I was going to say if you'd let me keep going.
Well, I tell you what, actually, let's talk about Wimbledon then, because it does look like they're going down to League Two. By the time you watch this, that could be confirmed. Jeff, you've been taking your son to Wimbledon this season.
Yeah.
Am I wrong to be considering phoning Childline? I know Esther Ranson is a big fan of the show.
Look, it's all about management. And I plotted him up very carefully to the idea of what was happening, that our playing budget was one of the lowest in League One, and that, you know, being back at Plough Lane was the most important thing. And the truth is, Stoney, if I just set aside, you know, what I'm known for is, you know, the belly laughs and the rock-solid banter, is that it is the experience of going back to Wimbledon. Obviously, I grew up there. My first three homes were 5 minutes from the ground. I had family and friends there. And over the years, you know, people pass on or they move away. So I didn't really have a reason to be in Wimbledon. It was sad. I'd go there sometimes and walk around Ely's, which is very niche reference, but people from the area will know what I mean. You know, I go to Wimbledon Common, and just being a sole man walking around Wimbledon Common is not a good thing either. But now the club are back, and actually it's been a hard season. But I will say this, if any of the AFC lads are watching, they're a young squad, they're talented. What they've lacked is just a bit of in-game experience and a bit of physical strength. And if we can keep people like Ayoub Issaou, Paul Osayu, Callum Bae, people like that, I think we'll do okay in League Two. But I've never felt, genuinely, since I was a teenager, more connected to the club than I do now.
That's great. I mean, it really is great. But Ivo, what about this thing about if you don't suffer relegation, you don't get the pain and then the joy if you're a mid-table team? I mean, essentially, would you rather watch Southampton every season or Fulham?
Well, listen, Jeff's been too bashful to say it on air. But one of the nicer things he did say before the show was that one of the perks of Wimbledon getting relegated would be some nice trips to the county ground. And that's
club.
The... barring a late playoff surge from the boys, of course, fingers crossed. But
you do look at that, Ivor. When you're going down a level, you go, right, okay, it's League Two. What are the big clubs that we've got down there? And I say big in that context, Swindon are absolutely a big club.
in that context.
We've been doing the same thing. We've been doing it the same thing with the Europa Conference League at Arsenal. I've never been to Kazakhstan.
Well, exactly.
I mean, let's talk Swindon for a short while. Currently 10th in League Two, but as you said, in with a little shout at a playoff place. You are the Barcelona of Wiltshire, aren't you?
I'm not joking
here, by the way. You do play some lovely football.
We do play some lovely football. We do, I would say, we deliver less consistently on the full potential of tiki-taka than, you know, your sort of Barcelona in their pomp. Sometimes it literally is just watching our centre-backs pass it to each other. And you think, oh, that's okay. They're just stretching the opposition, you know, tiring them out, bamboozling them, and then we pounce. But what often happens
is... with an 80-yard pass.
Yes, it's sometimes the match will finish before that happens. And often the opposition will make even more of a mockery of it by actually sneaking in a couple of late goals past us because we've actually tired ourselves out with all the bamboozling. Our defenders are top of the League Two passing stat tables. But that's like one of those sort of GIFs you get on Twitter of PlayStation characters holding a trophy that isn't actually there. The fact is we've been scintillating in about sort of five or six games this season against some of the best teams in the league, no less. We've been, you know, promising in about 10 games and we've been pure dross in 15 to 20 of them. And that's not good enough to go up. That being said, last summer, it looked like we weren't going to have a club either. And as Jeff says, you've got to remember what you have to be grateful for. We were saying if it's just not back-to-back relegations, that's what we want. The problem is we then started the season too well. We've signed some pretty exciting players who probably won't be here next season. And most cruelly, having, I'd say, started to look like we'd given up and packing for the metaphorical beach from about sort of March, just every time we think we've got the sort of suitcase packed, you know, Amber Soler, flip-flops, and we're heading to speedy boarding, we pull a result like our Good Friday hammering of Harrogate out of the bag, which just keeps us in touch. And then we lose at home to Leighton Orient on Easter Monday, and it's gone again. And we beat Hartlepool on the weekend just gone. So now we've got three games left, and if we win them all, we'll make it in. But I don't think it's going to happen. Tonight, we're at home to Forest Green Rovers, who've been promoted, but they still want to be green champions. I'll be co-commentating for BBC Wiltshire and iFollow. It's a huge day for me personally, and I'll be trying to stay as unbiased as possible. But really, if we beat Forest Green, it's just going to extend the torture of us then, you know, not beating Walsall on the final day or something.
Do you know what would really sad?
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back.
Do you know what the sad thing was there, Stoney? As I was trying to be positive about playing in League Two, Ivo then rattled off a string of teams that I don't want to play: Hartlepool, Harrogate, Leighton Orient, Forest Green Rovers. I was like, Jesus Christ, it is tragic. Actually, forget what I said.
Well,
about...
don't you worry, Jeff. Forest Green are passing in the other way, so that's absolutely fine.
Okay.
You're fine, mate. Now, as Dolly Parton once sang, you can't have the rainbow without having some rain. Well, that works both ways in football, although not lyrically, but that's for another show. Yes, after last season's disaster in the Premier League, Fulham are coming back up. Fueled by 40 goals from Alexander Mitrovic, the Cottagers are back in the big time and planning their next assault on 17th place in the Premier League. Ivo, they're managed by Marco Silva, the ex-Watford manager, although, to be fair, who isn't an ex-Watford manager? We've all had a go, haven't we?
Yes, and I mean, you say, I'd say assault on the Premier League is a pretty generous description of Fulham's last few appearances. I mean, you asked earlier about whether you'd rather be a Southampton or a Fulham. I mean, firstly, I think the answer is a Southampton. You know, for the barring the odd 9-0 hammering, it's a very well run upward mobile club. Have you heard of James Ward-Prowse? But I think to enjoy, you know, the highs and lows of being a football fan spread across a few divisions and a few different away days is very much part of the experience. But I think Fulham and Norwich now, who never seen in the same room, they've now got this down to such a sort of fine non-art of sort of cold, financially secure aspiration, but aspiration to sort of nothing. It's quite depressing. And I say that as a Southwest Londoner who could get taken to Craven Cottage by my godfather Charlie whenever I wanted to, really. And it's disappointing, I think, because I remember going to parties very occasionally at university where I would exist at the party on a quiet corner of a sofa going, I'm just frankly just astonished to have been invited. The records will show that I was here, but at no point did I attempt to actually make a friend, drink a high strength drink, take part in any sort of conga. It was just a case of having been there, chalking that one up as social experience, and then going home again. And Fulham and Norwich's last couple of Premier League campaigns have been, with no disrespect to legendary Premier League figure Claudio Ranieri, dismal. And maybe if they can carry some of this free scoring, sort of Mitrovic-led sort of battering ram stuff into the Premier League, then it will be exciting. And 17th shouldn't be that much to aspire to. You know, the team who comes 17th this season is probably not going to have got a lot of points. But I'm not excited by it.
Well, let's see how they get on. Before we go to the break, let's have a quick game of Who Am I? I give our panellists clues. They flounder about for a bit and then almost certainly get it wrong. You can play this at home as well. Here we go. I was born in 1973. I played for 13 different clubs, one in Spain, one in France, and the rest in Italy. I move club every season, apart from a six-year spell at Inter. Despite this, I only won one league title, which wasn't at Inter. And I scored 23 goals in 49 matches, including 9 goals in 9 World Cup games across 98 and 2002, which makes me the joint highest World Cup goal scorer for my country. Who am I? We'll tell you in a mo. That's it for the first half. Our panellists are going to get a right good talking to, and we'll be back with renewed vim and vigour in part three. Part three of The Football's On with shipping magnate Ivo Graham, horse whisperer Jeff Norcott, and me, Ian Stone. So, it just keeps me amused, if nothing else. So, before the break, I asked, who am I? And I gave you these clues. Born in 1973, I played for 13 different clubs, one in Spain, one in France, and the rest in Italy. I moved club every season apart from a six-year spell at Inter. Despite this, only won one league title, which wasn't at Inter. And I scored 23 goals in 49 matches, including 9 goals in 9 World Cup games across 98 and 2002, which makes me the joint highest World Cup goal scorer for my country. Who am I? Ivo, I'll come to you first.
No.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, I, oh man.
Well, you know the country, right?
Well, presumably he's Italian.
Yes.
So is it Christian Vieri?
Oh, boom! Straight in there.
Yeah, I was going to say Christian Vieri. I was going to say.
Were you, Jeff?
Christian Vieri, good in the air.
Well, it was indeed Christian Vieri. I mean, I've got a list here. He played for Torino, Pisa, Ravenna, Venezia, Atalanta, Juventus, Atletico, Lazio, Inter, AC Milan, Monaco, Sampdoria, Atalanta, Fiorentina, and Atalanta again. It's like
fair play.
Burton and Taylor, isn't it, with him in Atalanta? 9 World Cup goals.
Did you just do a Burton Taylor analogy? Because you know the funny thing is, Stoney, I was going to go, oh, he's like the Clive Allen of Italian football. And I thought, that's a bit old. I don't want to go there.
You know what? We do have older viewers as well, you know. Hello out there. Are you okay? Make sure you got your blanket on. He got 9 World Cup goals anyway. He's level with Roberto Baggio and Paolo Rossi. Not bad at all. Christian Vieri, that is it. I'm astounded, Ivo. Well done.
Oh, thank you very much, Ian.
Guess who's been out filming again? Some of it this morning. It's Quentin Tarantino from Wiltshire. The Sergei Eisenstein of soccer. It's Ivo Action Graham. Silence on set.
This April marked 20 years since the release of Bend It Like Beckham, the highest grossing football figure of all time, and the only one so far to feature both Keira Knightley and Thomas Redzinski. It's a rogue topic for a BTVT, but it was this or a piece about Luton, and only one of those vlogs involved getting to watch Bend It Like Beckham again. So many apologies to the Hatters. Gurinder Chadha's film was not just a heart warmer, but a groundbreaker. From its social commentary, to its championing of women's football, to its soundtrack's inclusion of not one, but two Victoria Beckham songs. Did David have that written in the contract? It's not for me to say. It was also the first Western film ever to be screened on North Korean television. Superb pub ammo. The self-styled dear leader, Kim Jong-il, said he found Jonathan Rhys-Meyers' character a bit basic, but that didn't stop him giving it 5 shining stars. It was also the start of a fruitful big screen career for Beckham himself, who since appeared in 2 Guy Ritchie films and seen both of his feet get a shout out in Love Actually. More recently, he's been making his own honey while his son marries into money. But this weekend, beekeeping Bex saw the Bend-based buzz brought to Brighton, where Southampton's James Ward-Prowse moved to within 4 free kicks of his hero's dead ball record. I got a lot of time for JWP, and not just because he's the double-barreled son of a barrister who says he couldn't do what his father does because he couldn't handle the paperwork. Preach. There's a real philosophy to his art. Witness how he always places the ball with the sponsor facing up, a habit based on superstition and a deep respect for big corporations. Chiwupa also says that he only practices a few free kicks a week so as to preserve and enhance the pressure of the big game scenario, a rallying cry for lazy loopholers everywhere. This plucky saint, this taker and cutter of corners, is writing himself into his team's history books just as fast as Matt Letizia is writing himself out of them. And it's not just media manipulation to say that he should be saying aloha to Doha in November. Joep has said that he'd love to meet Beckham if he does beat his record. And Golden Balls took a few seconds away from the hives on Sunday to begrudgingly wish him luck via an Insta story. But the real question is there a film in it? Is UK cinema ready for Whip It Like Ward-Prowse? I vote Graham for BT Sport, turning the mosquito bites of news into the juicy, juicy mangoes of content.
Yes, that was Ivo Graham talking about James Ward-Prowse. Jeff, I'll ask you, is it worth taking him to the World Cup just to bring him on for free kicks?
What, James Ward-Prowse?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean...
No, not Ivo.
Is he good? Is he good? I don't know who this person is. I'm a League One guy. James Ward...
All these Jeff! Young,
that Man United guy you showed earlier, I just thought this could be a blag. This could be like a belated April Fool's trick. He doesn't look like a footballer. He didn't even look British. He looked Dutch, frankly. So I don't know if this is an allowed... James Ward-Prowse. Yeah, we should take him to the World Cup, even though you might be telling me the name of some sixth former who you're related to.
Ivo... You know what? I'll come back to you. He does take a mean free kick. You know, he's currently, was it 1 behind Beckham? You were saying he's...
No, he's 4 behind Beckham. So arguably...
Oh, he's 4
I've,
behind Beckham.
Yes, I've arguably jumped the gun with dedicating an entire VT to him. But I had to tie it in with the anniversary of Bend It Like Beckham in. You know, I'm working on very fine margins here. And the fact is that he is, you know, he's so many things to me at any rate. He's a taker of beautiful free kicks, scorer of great goals. He's also a very industrious midfielder. He's also, at time of writing, a one-club man, you know, a rare thing. He's, well, I am admittedly running out of things now, but all of those things I do. And a one-club man at a aspirational, solid sort of mid-table club. He's, yes. And I also like...
He's kind to animals as well, apparently.
And he's very, very kind to animals, actually.
Well, he also is that thing of a lot of modern footballers, this thing that, if I'm honest, does wind me up a little bit as the old double-barreled name, because it underlines how much of a limited shelf life this has got. James Ward-Prowse, if he gets together and has a surrogate child with Loftus-Cheek, this thing only ever had a one-generation shelf life. You know, these kids, I know that they want to demonstrate, you know, their politically correct credentials. I would say, when you get married... Pick a name, doesn't matter, it could be the woman's name. Say, who's got the coolest name? Because Loftus-Cheek is a ridiculous name, I'm sorry.
To be fair, astonishing that Jeff was having a go at essentially double-barreled names and wokeness in one fell swoop and didn't go for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. So a huge restraint on his part there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to be said for the fact that if James Ward-Prowse's child married Ruben Loftus-Cheek's child and they became a professional footballer, the cost of the name on the back of the shirt would be more than the shirt
itself. The working man, as ever, Stoney. I'm looking out for the working man.
That's what you're always doing, Jeff. That's right. So, trouble in Paris last weekend, where an unpopular leader was turned on by people who were initially enthusiastic about his appointment. But that's enough about Emmanuel Macron. Let's talk about Maurizio Pochettino at PSG. Jeff, the fans were leaving before the end of the game when they're winning the title.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Messi should have stood in the middle of the pitch and shouted at them, Are you not entertained? Is this not why you came? Well, and then maybe threw a sword at the director's box, you know.
Look, what we don't know here, it's very easy to sit and judge, isn't it? But what we don't know is what the traffic is like around the Parc des Princes. And they, I'd imagine, pretty bad. And they've had a lot of success there. It is a bit of a Mickey Mouse league. They've got a lot of money. Again, we talk about this entitlement. They're gorged up. They're overflowing with it. And when you say the joy of celebrating with a team who they still haven't forgiven, by the way, for getting knocked out of the Champions League, or being ahead of the traffic. Just say the words, ahead of the traffic. We're all men of the world. It's a great feeling. You know, so you could have some video on your phone that you'll never watch of someone lifting a trophy, which you never watch. Or you could just video your own face being ahead of the traffic.
Yeah. No, I see that. Ahead of the traffic. I see that. There is something also, about the traffic in Paris. I mean, yeah, people who are coming onto roundabouts get right of way. It's just, it's not right, is it?
You don't want to
get it. Well, and also, Ian, what you have to remember is it's a farmers' league, so the away fans are all in tractors. So it's a real nightmare trying to get anywhere.
They booed Neymar, though, Ivo. I mean, should we actually applaud them for that?
I think we should applaud them for it. You know, it's what a... You know, I think it's always easier to enjoy the sort of failed excess of you know, clubs you don't really care for in leagues you don't know so much about. But, you know, all three of them really, so in different ways, the Messi, Neymar, Mbappe, all sort of unhappy, underwhelming, and dare I say it, fans who've discovered that a trip to M&M World isn't quite the tourist spectacular you thought it would be.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Germany, Bayern Munich won the Bundesliga again. That makes 10 times in a row. Jeff, is this similar to Ant and Dec winning Best Entertainment Show at the TV Awards every year?
There's pretty much no difference between it. I mean, the only thing I would say is that we have a tendency here, like we do with a lot of our European counterparts, to romanticise what they've got going on over there. Oh, it's so much better, it's so much more cultured, so much more enlightened. Their Premier League, it's nothing to do with money, it's just beer and bratwurst, and it's €5 for the whole family to get in. And what you forget is that in Germany, the richest club win everything all the time, you know, all the time. Here, we've got a far more egalitarian system where if you get some sort of despot from another country that's got enough money that they want to squirrel away, then you've got lots of clubs that are funded by blood money that could win the league. And then you get a trickle-down effect where somehow you've got Brentford and Bournemouth in the Premiership. So that is how the benefits of untrammeled capitalism can work in the end. You know, I think it's time to look at the German league and say, I don't really know any other teams that play in it other than Bayern.
I don't know about you, Ivo. I think I can hear Land of Hope and Glory faintly in the distance there.
Well, listen, I hate to fly in the face of another impassioned defence of untrammeled capitalism from Jeff Norcott. But actually, though, of course, we may see a sea change with, you know, the... with what happens to Newcastle or with Man United working out how to turn money into success again. But actually, the Premier League would be in real danger, I would say, of becoming just a Man City steamroller every year on current form if it weren't for Jurgen Klopp, who was the last person to break the Bayern Munich monopoly in Germany. So really, I think it's a reminder of how rare it is. And obviously, of course, Liverpool have got, you know, huge amounts of money and, you know, it's sort of not dissimilar infrastructure. But you've still got that thing where fundamentally it's rare that a combination of, you know, a really, really strong manager and spirit can disrupt a monopoly like that. So careful what you wish for.
Quite. In Serie A, it's in for a close finish with Inter and AC Milan going head-to-head for the title. Milan are 2 points ahead, but Inter have a game in hand. Ivo, do you think this title race will overshadow Fashion Week?
not for me, Ian. I have both eyes on the catwalk.
Fair enough. Meanwhile, over in East London, West Ham are motoring along in the Europa League and David Moyes has enhanced his reputation to the point that he would certainly have been talked about as the next Manchester United manager if it wasn't for the minor but crucial detail that he's already had a go. Ivo, after the Royal Family, you're the least Cockney person I've ever met. Do you have an affinity for the Hammers?
Ian, I cannot claim a deep and spiritual affinity with West Ham United. I did live in East London for several years, but I dare say I was part of the gentrification problem rather than the OG iron massive. I've got some very dear friends who support West Ham. I think David Moyes has done a truly heartwarming job. And I would Amazing. Just implore him, you know, with everything he's achieved this season, and especially if they actually win it, which would be wonderful, please retire. David Moyes has to go out on that. The redemption arc is complete. He certainly won't top it with West Ham, and he probably wouldn't top it with anyone else. And I don't think I can handle another sort of David Moyes slump period. Those eyes getting sadder and sadder again as he becomes a figure of fun again. He's recovered from Sociedad and Sunderland. He's done a genuinely wonderful job. And I do hope that they can go all the way this season.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know what? I have to agree. Also, we should say that Rangers are into the semi-finals as well. They could play, West Ham could play Rangers in the final. One would imagine all police leave being cancelled for a month. anyway, now it's time for the quiz that is rapidly becoming as much a part of the cultural fabric of this country as Songs of Praise and Naked Attraction. Now, there's a crossover we'd like to see. The way it works is that we ask questions based on this week's action, and then there's a brand new element designed specifically to put the cat amongst the pigeon. Calm down, Kurt Zouma, has nothing to do with you. So, Jeff, you'll be going first, and after the general knowledge bit, you'll have to choose two final questions from one of the two topics that we've come up with, and that will mean Ivo gets the topic you don't want later in the show.
Okay.
Is that clear? Doesn't matter. Anyway, question one. Jeff, which player became the first player at his club to score two goals on his 100th Premier League appearance? Is it Gabriel Jesus, James Ward-Prowse, Joe Linton, or Matej Vidra?
I think Linton.
I love that you called him Linton. It's actually, but it's okay. His name's not Joseph Linton.
Do you know the only reason I know? Linton. Do you know the only reason I know that is because I'm on a lads WhatsApp group and they all support Liverpool, and that's the only way that I fully keep up with Premiership football. And I remember just seeing old Linton. Good lad. It does
well,
sound
it
like a first
Joseph
name.
Joseph Linton.
Linton.
You're right. Okay. I've got to give him a point for that.
Well, because I got it Rangers right, mainly. I mean, that would be the main reason that is me getting the question right would be why I got a point, arguably.
Well, okay. West Ham and Rangers are in Europa League semi-finals over the next week. If either side were to win it, they would add to a list of British sides to win the trophy. How many times have a British side won the Europa League, the UEFA Cup, or the Fairs Cup? Is it A, 6 times, B, 8 times, C, 9 times, or D, 13 times?
I could instinctively think of 6 clubs off quite quickly. So it'd probably be more than that. What was the option? Was it 8?
6, 8, 9, or 13?
I'm going to inflate that a little bit. I'm going to go for 9.
No, it's 13,
wow.
Jeff.
Okay.
13. Liverpool 3 times, Spurs, Chelsea and Leeds twice, and Man United, Ipswich, Arsenal and Newcastle once each. No Scottish side has won it. Question 3. It wasn't the best of weekends for penalty takers. We're talking about Fernandes and Jorginho, but which team has missed the most penalties this season? Is it Manchester United, Arsenal, Chelsea or Wolves?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a team. I mean, all those teams are teams that have had reasonably good seasons. United, instinctively, you just feel that with the general melee that's been going on there, that probably their player has run up, then faced the other way and kicked it into the stands at the fan that's been barracking him. So I'm going to go for A, Man United.
No, it's B, Arsenal. Oh. Arsenal have missed 3 of the 7 they have been awarded. Okay, Jeff, 1 out of 3 at the moment. Now, your bonus questions, Jeff, you have a choice of title winners or Brazilians?
That'll be title winner, Stoney, please. Do you know how much dignity you're giving me back by having multiple choices on these questions?
Well, we had to do that.
Well,
last week was so difficult.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, title winners. Serie A is possibly the tightest league of the top 5 European leagues, with the 2 Milan clubs at the top, closely followed by Napoli and Juventus. Which club outside these teams has the most title wins in Serie A?
Just name the sisters. Inter, AC, what were the other two?
Juventus and Napoli.
Napoli. I mean, it's a real toss-up between the other two Italian teams that I know. I'm going to go Roma.
It's not Roma, it's Genoa. 9 wins.
When were they? Was that in your day, was it?
Yeah, that was Christopher Columbus had just sailed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my day. PSG, okay, another question. PSG won their 10th title of the weekend, not their fans would let us see it, drawing them level as all-time winners of Ligue 1. Which team has also won 10 Ligue 1 titles?
Marseille?
No, Saint-Étienne. What? Saint-Étienne, who last won it in 1981.
Oh, this is humiliating, was it?
Jeff Norcott, even with all the help we gave him, scored 1 point. After the break, Ivo will get the grilling, although I'd characterise it more as a light basting with a drizzle of olive oil. See you afterwards. Part four of the football's on. Before the break, Jeff Norcott scored 1 out of 5. Now it's Ivo Graham's turn. Question one, Ivo. Craig Dawson felt VAR's wrath as his yellow card was upgraded to a red. But which team has had the most red cards this season in the Premier League? Is it A, West Ham, B, Leeds, C, Burnley, or D, Everton?
Everton.
It is Everton. 4. They've had 4 red cards.
Should have had 5 on Sunday.
Yes, I think you're right. Question two. Everton have dropped into the relegation zone after the weekend's results, but since the Premier League moved to a 38-game season, what team holds the record for most points in a season while still being relegated? Is it A, West Ham, B, Sheffield United, C, Newcastle, or D, Derby County?
Most and still relegated.
Yes.
I will say, I'll say West Ham United.
He's already winning. 42 well, points.
Well, we're done now, aren't
42
we?
42 points.
We're done. There you go.
Excellent.
That was
2002 to 2003, they got 42 and they were still relegated. Question three. Well, Ivo. James Ward-Prowse scored his 4th goal from a direct free kick this year. The record in the Premier League is 5 in a season and the record is shared between David Beckham and which other player? Is it Laurent Robert, Cristiano Ronaldo, Alex Lacazette or Steven Gerrard?
Laurent Robert.
Boom. Boom. 3 out of 3.
Is there only 3 on that multiple choice? Because you're actually working the odds in his favour. Mine all had
no,
A through to D.
No. A to D.
If you shoot for the king, you better not miss, Jeff.
My head's gone.
Yeah, okay. The bonus questions. Jeff had title winners, so you're getting Brazilians, Ivo. Okay, question one. Or question four for you. Gabriel Jesus scored a fantastic 4 goals versus Norwich at the weekend, but he is not the highest scoring Brazilian in the Premier League. Who is? There's no multiple choice this time.
Yes, there's no multiple choice for that one. Let me dwell. Let me dwell just briefly on this because that's got to be doable.
He's looking for 5 out of 5. This is the point.
I want 5 out of 5, and I'm prepared to waste a minute or two of everyone's time. That's not a couple of minutes, though, is it, Ian?
Points start coming off, don't they? After a while.
No, I don't think that's how it is. The thing is, I mean, it's not a very positive thing to say. I can't think of. Oh, I'll say Willian.
Oh, it's Firmino.
And the point off as well for time wasting.
Willian's got to be close.
Gabriel Jesus got 53. Willian actually is not here. And wherever he scored the goals, it wasn't for Arsenal. That is what I do know. And the second of your bonus questions. Who was the first Brazilian player to play in the top flight of English football?
Whatever.
Yes.
Oh, I don't think I'm going to be anywhere near that.
Remember that geezer? I genuinely think I do.
All right, Jeff. If you can get this, I'll give you the whole game.
I don't mind that actually.
Anyone got any idea?
Did he play for Newcastle in the 80s?
He did.
Oh my God! Yes. Then it is the geezer I'm thinking of. I can't remember his bloody name. I remember it was the most exotic thing that had ever happened in Newcastle by that point in human history was that them having Brazilian. Oh, God. What was his name again? Oh, I can't remember.
You'll never get it. It is Mirandinha.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Didn't know that.
Mirandinha. Well, yes, except you didn't, actually. he signed for Newcastle. 1987, stayed for two seasons and then went back to Brazil, probably slightly traumatised by the big market, I imagine. So Ivo ended up with 3 out of 5, a 3-1 win for Ivo Graham there. I thought it was excellent work. It was a bad weekend for the stutter penalty. On the Saturday at the Emirates, Bruno Fernandes took approximately 40 steps to cover the 2 yards to the penalty spot, and then planted his penalty onto the post and away. I have to say, one of my favourite moments this season at the Emirates. And then on the Sunday, Jorginho tried the same trick and passed it back gently to Lucas Fabianski. Ivo, if someone tried the stutter step penalty at Swindon and missed, would they be shunned in the town centre?
I mean, I'd say the town centre isn't the most sort of... you know, it's not the warmest embrace in the southwest at the best of times. But I mean, you know, there would certainly be a fair amount of delight in it. Gabriel Jesus, the aforementioned high-scoring Brazilian, who might have been about to sign for Arsenal until this weekend, he missed a penalty against Swindon in January in the FA Cup. Not with a complete stutterer, but with a pretty complacent sort of short run up and dance. And it was, I mean, obviously we were getting battered and we were battered, but it was a triumphant moment. I despise the stutter. I think Geoffrey Rush of the King's Speech fame needs to be sent in to fix all of these various impediments. I do understand that it can, you know, it can serve a purpose. When England heartbreakingly lost against Italy on penalties this summer, and may I say how painful it is to now see Bukayo Saka enjoying such confidence from the penalty spot. But Rashford did not this stutter, which I understood as far as it had been described by the various pundits, as an attempt to beat Donnarumma, who was like one of the most imposing goalkeepers you could be facing. And maybe the only way he could get past his enormous frame was by tricking him, and he came very close. But mostly, it is just an absolute nonsense farce. And it's basically, I could never do it, partly because I'm not an elite-level footballer or indeed an amateur footballer, but also because I spend my life just trying to minimise the chance of humiliation to as few factors as possible. Yeah. Missing a penalty, sure, I'll almost certainly do that anyway. One humiliation. Missing a penalty while doing a sort of clever, clever dance that doesn't work. Two humiliations. Just take the one humiliation that's on offer.
Mm.
Yes, yes. Is that your family motto?
Yeah, in Greek.
Jeff, yeah. Whatever happened to just running up and hitting the ball as hard as you can?
It's British football. Come on, let's just go up. Even a toe punt. You know, even a toe punt. Just for the excitement, because a stutter penalty is a bit like a very long pause before a punchline. Like when you see Stuart Lee do it, you go, he's probably going to deliver. When you see some 22-year-old and they're doing observational routines about custard creams, you go, you don't get to do this, all right? Because this now has to be the best punchline I've ever heard. Exactly as Ivo said, you've got to basically do a little chip shot that just evades the keeper's hand. Otherwise, it's not worth it, is it? I mean, if you're stuttering because of a genuine anxiety disorder, that's a different issue. That would be more where I'd be coming at it from, just paralysed by fear. But then speak to a counsellor. It's a different issue, Stoney.
No, I agree with you. Although I should say at this point that I do have quite a funny routine about custard cream. That's it for the show. The big game on Saturday morning is Newcastle against Liverpool, live here on BT Sport at 11:30. Although if you tune in an hour earlier, you'll see a repeat of this show. That would be your Saturday sorted. In the meantime, thanks to Jeff Norcott and Ivo Graham. I'm Ian Stone. See you next week.